It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 33 degrees. It is now raining through the foggy mist. At the airport, they are showing west winds at 6 miles per hour, and they are down to 1 1/4 mile of visibility. Look for just a chance of rain for the rest of the afternoon. Southeast winds to 20. Could gust as high as 35. Chance of rain and snow tonight, going to a likelihood of snow. And for tomorrow, just a 30% chance of snow, gradually becoming mostly sunny tomorrow. And look for sunny skies on Wednesday and mostly sunny skies for Thursday and Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola ranks second highest in staff turnover in the U.S. House. The Department of Agriculture is offering grants for rural areas to reduce energy costs. And Governor Mike Dunleavy issued an executive order that changes the ferry board.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Michigan holds its presidential nominating contest tomorrow. NPR's Leila Fadel reports a progressive coalition in the state is urging voters to register their anger over President Biden's response to the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza by urging them to cast uncommitted ballots.
The coalition is called Listen to Michigan and is getting support of some 40 elected Democrats in the state, including the mayor of Dearborn. Abdullah Hamoud Sidi is majority Arab American.
The people who are dying, these are our family members and our friends, people who we know directly, but also pain due to betrayal, betrayal by this president, betrayal by the administration, and betrayal by all those that are uplifting the most right-wing government in Israel's history and continually supporting this genocide.
He says the Arab American and American Muslim population might not be sizable enough to make a candidate win, but it can make a candidate lose. Leila Fadel, NPR News, Dearborn.
A Pentagon official tells NPR that the man who died after setting himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. yesterday was U.S. Airman Aaron Bushnell. NPR reviewed video of the incident, which was live-streamed on social media. In it, Bushnell said he was protesting Israel's war in Gaza. A Pentagon internal review finds no ill intent in the communication breakdown that surrounded Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's recent hospitalizations. Here's NPR's Tom Bowman.
The review basically says the secretary's staff was limited in three significant ways from basically telling the White House what happened. First, they talk about medical privacy laws. They talked about sharing medical information with the secretary's staff, and they also said for privacy reasons, his staff were hesitant to pry or share any information that they did learn. And finally, they said they had problems with timely, secure communications to talk with officials as well.
NPR's Tom Bowman. U.S. regulators and 9 state attorney general are suing to stop the merger of Kroger and Albertsons. More from NPR's Alina Selyuk.
Kroger, the biggest grocery chain, wants to buy Albertsons, the second biggest chain, for almost $25 billion. And the deal has been under antitrust review for more than a year. Now, the Federal Trade Commission and 9 states are suing to block the merger, saying it would eliminate competition for both shoppers and for workers, potentially leading to higher prices, lower quality services, and worse benefits for employees. The companies have argued that together they would be stronger to face growing national competition from Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and even dollar stores. The grocery retailers had proposed to sell off hundreds of stores to essentially create a competitor to themselves, but the regulators say the plan falls short. Alina Selyuk, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. stocks end the day lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 62 points to settle at 39,069. It's NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola ranks second highest in staff turnover for the U.S. House of Representatives. That's according to a subscription data service called Legistorm. They calculate her turnover rate is nearly four times the House average. It's a ranking her political adversaries are highlighting. The right-wing blog Must Read Alaska wrote about Peltola's turnover rate in November, suggesting it's a sign of a toxic work environment. Ben Peterson of the National Republican Congressional Committee says voters should pay attention to turnover.
It could be indicative of dysfunction in the office.
But Peltola's chief of staff, Anton McParland, says the staff turnover is a reflection of how she came into office. She won the 2022 special election to serve the remaining 3 1/2 months of the late Don Young's term. And McParland says they had to hire quickly with no certainty that Peltola's tenure would continue in 2023.
We made the intentional choice to retain a good amount of Don Young's staff during that transition. Many of these people stepped up because they're devoted to Alaska, and they appreciated Mary's intention on really wanting to fulfill the Don Young legacy.
McParland says two former Don Young employees remain on the staff. The Federal Department of Agriculture is offering grants to help people who live and work in Alaska's rural areas to reduce their energy costs. The program is available to rural farmers, small business owners, tribal organizations, nonprofits, and others. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Doing business in Alaska is challenging, and even more so in the state's rural areas. That's why the USDA is offering bigger grants this year through its Rural Energy for America program, or REAP, that helps rural business persons reduce one of their biggest expenses.
One of the highest fixed costs is the energy cost.
Dan Smith is the state energy coordinator for the Agriculture Department's Alaska Rural Development Office.
And so if you're able to bring down the energy cost, it just makes your operation much more sustainable.
That's what Corey Eberhardt had in mind when he applied for a nearly $18,000 REAP grant a couple of years ago to help pay for solar panels on his family's lodge off of Chena Hot Springs Road, east of Fairbanks. Eberhardt said he'd considered investing in solar panels, but hesitated because of the upfront cost.
I thought it'd be great, you know, opportunity with the program. So by having that grant, that kind of sealed the deal.
We know that the costs are exorbitantly higher the further you get away from urban areas.
Julia Nilica is the USDA's state director for rural development. She was born and raised in Nenana, so she's pretty familiar with living and working in rural Alaska.
We want to make sure that small businesses have a fighting chance to access new technologies at a reduced rate, because it is so very important for the long-run viability of their businesses.
Nilica says USDA has for years offered REAP grants that would pay up to a quarter of energy project costs, but the nationwide program got a big infusion of cash from the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act that enabled the agency to award grants that pay up to half the cost.
Now we have the opportunity to go 50-50 with the customer.
Smith, the state energy coordinator, says the program offers grants for both renewable energy systems like wind and solar and energy efficiency that help pay for workplace improvements that keep heat from leaking to the outside.
Insulation, new windows, and upgrading thermostats and building controls.
Smith encourages residents who qualify to contact the Alaska Rural Development Office staff as soon as possible and to get help submitting applications that must include estimates on how much the improvements will reduce energy costs.
Whatever fits best for your business or your agriculture operation, your co-op, you just have to show us the math supporting that this is a good fit.
The grants are awarded on a quarterly basis, and that's also when applications are accepted. The next deadline to apply is March 31st, followed by one on June 30th and September 30th. You can find out more by going online to the USDA's Alaska Rural Development Office website. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a record 12 executive orders at the beginning of this year's legislative session. One of those would bring big changes to a board tasked with overseeing Alaska's ferry system. Right now, legislative leaders in the state House and Senate have the power to appoint four of the board's nine members. The executive order would change that, allowing the governor to appoint all nine. Alaska Public Media state government reporter Eric Stone spoke to KTOO's Katie Anastas about what the board does and why some lawmakers are skeptical of the executive order.
So this executive order is all about the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. Let's start with the basics. What is this board?
So it's a committee made up of nine members. It's supposed to help the AMHS plot its future course, so to speak. They're also supposed to give advice on basically how to run the ferry system better. It was created by the legislature to replace the previous version, the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, which was criticized as ineffective. And there are all kinds of folks on it. There's a union member, a representative of a tribal group. There's a deputy transportation commissioner. And then six members who have specific expertise in a variety of areas that are helpful to the Marine Highway System. Here's Senator James Kaufman. He is an Anchorage Republican, and he was one of the architects of the board.
We wanted to be sure that in aggregate that the board had not any one person, but when pulled all together, that the board had the technical competencies around enterprise management, quality management, the different things that help.
And I spoke with Representative Louise Stutz, the former speaker, in early February about this. She's a Kodiak Republican and a big ferry system booster. And she says the board and its structure was the product of consensus.
We really took a lot of time and care to work on, and it was a bipartisan, bicameral piece of legislation that passed both bodies unanimously. So it's a little bit difficult for me to accept redoing the whole board.
And so the executive order would allow the governor to appoint all members and not just a majority of them.
That's right.
And do we know why the governor wants that change?
Well, so I was wondering that for quite a while, actually. Until this week, all the administration had really said about this publicly is that the executive order made the government more effective and efficient and provided mechanisms for accountability, but they hadn't really explained how. And we did get something of an explanation from the Department of Transportation on Tuesday. So DOT's Andy Mills works with the board pretty closely. He's also the legislative liaison for Department of Transportation. And he told the Senate Transportation Committee that the administration wanted the board to be accountable to the governor.
How the board appointing power works does create a layer of accountability that may not exist for the board to work with the department. And again, my words, my characterization, but sometimes interactions, and again, very specific interactions, not the entire board, it's been more adversarial than advisory, which is unfortunate.
DOT Commissioner Ryan Anderson says the board isn't delivering the short and long-term plans that it's tasked with crafting. And he compared the board with some of the other boards that have all the members appointed by the governor, like the Roads and Highways Advisory Board.
Alignment is a word that I think of quite a bit when we're talking about these boards that, you know, boards that are aligned, that come together, move things forward quickly.
And did those ideas ring true for lawmakers?
Some lawmakers were skeptical. Senator Kaufman took issue with the idea that it's the board's job to come up with these short and long-term plans for the ferry system. Kaufman says the board's job is to give advice on plans that DOT is supposed to come up with. Thus, it's not quite right to say the board isn't doing its job. Senator Jesse Keel, he's a Juneau Democrat, big booster of the ferry system. He took issue with the commissioner's characterization that certain members weren't aligned with one another. He said in past years, he's seen Marine Highway leadership pretty well aligned.
Making tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of decisions sometimes in ways that have turned out to be inefficient, sometimes in ways that have turned out to be failures. Quickly achieving alignment may not be in the best interest of the system at all.
So Anderson, the DOT commissioner, he emphasized later in the meeting that that two of the members that are appointed by the legislature, who happen to be the chair and the vice chair of this board, would not necessarily be replaced if this order takes effect. But of course, all the members would serve at the pleasure of the governor, and that means they could be replaced at any time.
Okay, got it. So what comes next?
So the Senate Transportation Committee will hear some public testimony, and then they'll likely move it out of committee to the Senate floor. And then from there, the path is a bit murkier. The legislature has until mid-March to take a joint session vote on disapproving the governor's executive orders, and that would prevent them from taking effect. But the House has to invite the Senate into joint session for that to happen, and all this objection we've been hearing has been on the Senate side. Last we heard, that the House was open to a joint session, but they hadn't quite worked out the details of how that would work. And even if they do come into joint session, it's no guarantee they wind up voting the orders down. So you'll just have to stay tuned.
All right, that was Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
For many of us, middle school has a bad rap. It's a stressful time when teenagers begin to test boundaries and explore their identities. But what if that was actually the curriculum? For 1 week, Blatchley Middle School in Sitka loses the books and all the normal routines and allows students to discover their potential. It's still school, but it's nothing like the middle school we remember. KCAW's Catherine Rose dropped by Discover Your Potential Week and sent this report.
It's a Thursday morning in the Blatchley Middle School home economics room, and about 15 middle schoolers are buzzing around the room, three to a station, decorating cakes. It's the Great Blatchley Bake-Off session of Discover Your Potential, or DYP. And while the students aren't baking in an English garden, their energy is the same as the contestants on the popular TV show. Eager, positive, and scrambling.
All right, you guys, we are less than 1 hour out.
1 hour out. Language arts teacher Brock Vowell might be Blatchley's equivalent to Paul Hollywood today, but he says kids don't have to have baking experience to be in his class.
So it's really, you know, I give them like a variety of cakes to choose from because we have a bunch of different experience levels here. And so they kind of choose their own cake and they collaborate with their team to kind of make a design that fits a specific theme that they kind of voted on.
At the end of the week, a group of teachers judge the students' baking creations and award prizes to the winners. Last year's reigning champion, Tegan Woodcock, is rolling out a big swatch of fondant onto a counter.
Well, we're using a fantasy theme, so we've also made a bunch of roses, and we're going to try and do like a white cover-up with roses on it.
At another station, newcomer Jake Carlos is making decorations for his team's Rapunzel cake, rolling fondant between his fingers with green food coloring.
This is fondant. I'm trying to make it look like a tree.
Carlos hasn't done much baking before this class, but he can cook.
I cook sometimes. I make cereal, Pot Pockets. I cook rice, and I like eating eggs.
While these students decorate their cakes, upstairs, another group of kids are flexing their artistic muscles in one of the other 70-plus activities available during DYP. But their mediums aren't fondant and frosting. They're liquid latex and scar wax.
I'm Mary Killer Esser, and this is Get Gorgeous. It basically is special effects stuff where we use materials to make us look like zombies or fake bruises or infected.
Keller Esser points to a very detailed wound and a patch of tiny pustules.
My injury is a fungus infection, kind of like The Last of Us, but it's just a first stage infection.
Special education teacher Judith Young is leading this course. Sitting at her desk, which is covered with tiny takeout sauce cups filled with fake blood, she explains what teachers hope students will gain from DYP.
It gives them an opportunity to, you know, spread their wings, learn different things they might not think they would like, but end up liking, or it gives them chances to do things that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Across the classroom, Casey Fish is slathering his arms and face in a white goop.
This is going to be my burned face and arms. The first layer is just a mix of latex and glue.
He says he could see himself doing special effects in movies as a job one day. He cites the 80s horror film Friday the 13th as an example with some killer special effects makeup. I ask him if his character has a story. How did he get these burns?
It was a knock-knock joke that went too far.
Knock, knock. Sorry. No way are we going to reveal humor so spicy it set the joke teller ablaze. You'll just have to wait 15 or 20 years to see the movie. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
The Junior Iditarod is a 150-mile-long sled dog race for mushers ages 14 to 17. Addie Peterson, the only competitive youth musher on the southern Kenai Peninsula, is racing this year for the first time. KBBI's Jamie Deep talked with Peterson as she prepared for the race.
Ninth grader Addie Peterson steps outside her house into a blustering snowstorm with a bucket and ladle in hand. Her sled dogs wait excitedly as she scoops their dinner into metal bowls.
For dinner, they typically get beef and then kibble, and then for breakfast, it's either beef, chicken, or eggs, or something lighter.
Afterward, Peterson goes to feed some puppies and non-sled dogs. In a few days, she'll take her team of six dogs out to Kinnick Lake, where, with four additional borrowed dogs, she will race in the Junior Iditarod, a 150-mile race for young mushers. This is Peterson's first year competing in the race, and her first season doing middle-distance races. Over just a few years ago, she went from completing her first race with her parents' dogs to getting her own and doing 100-mile races. Most of Peterson's dogs are young, roughly 2 years old, including her main leader, Star.
Passing and, like, crowds, she does get a little bit scared with that, and then, like, if somebody leaves snacks in the trail, she has a very hard time leaving those, and she always wants to go back and pick them up, but she's been doing really good.
Training for these races began late last month, when Peterson rode on a four-wheeler and slowly increased the distance to 30 to 40-mile runs. She says things picked up in the winter when she switched to training on a sled.
It's a ton of work, because if we're going to do a 60-mile training run, I mean, that's an all-day thing, like, it's a six-hour run, but then, like, waking up early to feed the dogs, I gotta feed them about 2 hours before we go, and then afterwards, like, cleaning up everything after the run and everything like that.
While there are other young mushers in the area, Peterson is the only one in the Southern Peninsula who races competitively. These races allow her to meet other mushers her age.
My favorite thing about going to other races is, like, people that they're very similar to me. I mean, they just love their dogs, they love the sport, and it's like, I don't have to, like, explain all, like, the pieces of mushing and stuff.
After the racing season, the pressure is off for Peterson. She says she's excited to focus on training two new puppies at that time. When she turns 18, she hopes to race in the Iditarod and become the youngest musher to complete it. The Junior Iditarod takes place this weekend at Kinnick Lake. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
The nation's economic outlook continues to improve. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. The National Association of Business Economics is the latest to predict that the U.S. economy this year will be stronger than previously thought. The organization's members expect the economy to grow 2.2% compared to 1.3% forecast just a few months ago. The World Trade Organization is considering whether to allow countries to tax streaming content, music, video games, films, and television programs. Right now, there's a moratorium on such taxes, but it needs to be extended, and some countries are pushing for a change. United Airlines is the third major U.S. carrier to raise baggage fees. A first checked bag will now cost as much as $40, up from $35. American and JetBlue made similar changes. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 26th day of February, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:12. It will set again at 6:33, giving us 10 hours and 21 minutes of daylight. A gain of 4 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 48 degrees. That was set in 2011. And our record low was 1 degree, set in 1986. Currently 33 degrees. It is raining. It's fogging. It's misting out at the airport. They are still down to 1 1/4 mile of visibility. And they are showing west winds at 6 miles per hour. The Weather Service says look for a chance of rain for the rest of the day. Southeast winds 20, coming down to 10 or so, but could gust as high as 35. For tonight, a chance of rain and snow before 10 p.m., then snow is likely. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 32, west winds to 20, gusting as high as 30. And for tomorrow, snow is likely in the morning, then cloudy skies will gradually become mostly sunny. High near 33 tomorrow with northwest winds to 25, gusting as high as 40. And look for sunny skies on Wednesday and mostly sunny skies on Thursday and Friday. Northwest winds continuing on Wednesday, 35 to 45 in the afternoon, gusting to 65 on Wednesday. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning for tomorrow. Southeast winds to 30 today. We'll turn to the southwest this afternoon. 10-foot seas today, 11-foot seas tonight. West winds to 30 knots tonight. And for tomorrow, northwest 35 and seas to 12 feet, becoming northwest 40 tomorrow night with 12-foot seas, and northwest 45 on Wednesday with seas at 13 feet on Wednesday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for tomorrow there as well, with east winds to 25 knots turning to the west this afternoon, 5-foot seas building to 7 feet tonight. Look for northwest winds to 30 knots tonight and tomorrow, and they will increase to 40 knots tomorrow afternoon, with 6-foot seas building to 9 feet in the afternoon tomorrow in the Shelikof. And for Tuesday night, northwest winds to 45 knots and seas to 11 feet, not much better. Northwest 40 on Wednesday, seas to 11 feet, and northwest 30 on Thursday with seas to 9 feet in the Shelikof on Thursday. There will be a Board of Education special meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, number F140 of the Old High School Wing. The meeting will also be streamed through Teams. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. Many other meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough, including tomorrow's meeting of the Parks and Recreation Committee. They're having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Also tomorrow, the Solid Waste Contract Committee will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. And also on Tuesday, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their budget work session in the Bayside Fire Hall at 6 p.m. tomorrow. On Wednesday, the Assembly and City Council will be having a joint work session. That will be happening in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Things going on over the weekend even. On Friday, the Mission Lake Tidegate Service Area Board will be having a budget public hearing. That's happening in the Borough Conference Room at 5 p.m. on Friday. And on Saturday, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having a board budget work session at the Bayside Fire Hall, always fun, at 9 a.m. on Saturday in the Bayside Fire Hall. There is still time to complete February's Genre Reading Challenge. That ends February 29th. You got one extra day. Record your progress on kodiak.beanstack.org. And now is the time to sign up for next month's challenge, I Did a Read. For more information on that, ask for help at the front desk of the library. Teens, do you need a calming, steady place? Well, on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the library, they feature lo-fi and chill. Unwind with calming lights, lo-fi tunes, and a relaxing atmosphere. Ideal for focused study or just hanging out with friends. It's for ages 13 and up. That's Tuesdays beginning at 11 a.m. going to 1 p.m. at the library. And on Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. is the Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. And don't forget, Thursday is the next chess club gathering. They will be meeting at 3 p.m. in the library on Thursday. The Lego Ninjago movie will be shown Friday. That's happening at 3:30 p.m. for the children's movie. It's rated PG. It's 1 hour and 40 minutes Lego Ninjago movie Friday at 3:30 p.m. at the library.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.